All was laid a distant moon ago here. July and August cannot be too hot, and there's a legal limit to the snow here in Camelot. The winter is forbidden till December, and exits March the 2nd on the dot. By order, summer lingers through September in Camelot. Camelot, Camelot, I know it sounds a bit bizarre, but in Camelot, Camelot, that's how conditions are. The rain may never fall till after sundown. By 8, the morning fog must disappear. In short, there's simply not a more congenial spot for happily ever aftering than here in Camelot. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's listener-supported radio, so you be sure to head on over to freedomslips.com or revolution.radio. Look for the donation button and use it. My first guest of the evening is Anthony Rayson. Anthony joins me each month. Anthony is a prison activist. He lives on the south side of Chicago, and I'm going to be adding him into the show right about now.
Hello.
We're still trying. I just got a hello, Anthony. All right. It's Chuck, the New American Dream Radio Show. You're on the air.
All right. Good. Thanks. I've had a rough couple of weeks. I've had two surgeries. I had a double hernia, so I did one 2 weeks ago and another one 2 days ago. So it's been kind of rough. So I'm going in the mailbag tonight. Pulled a few letters out and share them with you. Okay, here's one from a fellow named Joaquin Ramos. He's in Kinchillo, Michigan, Chippewa Correctional Facility. Dear Anthony and Mike, I haven't wrote in a while, and I hope that you are well. As for me, I'm just recovering from surgery on my abdomen, and I have a hernia mesh that somehow got infected. Ouch. That's what I'm trying to prevent. Having a surgery in prison is rough, I can imagine, because they get the bottom of the barrel doctors. They had to keep me in the hole right when I came from the hospital. Also, good news, my two little girls just recently got hold of me, so I've been talking to them. That's cool. My oldest is 16, and I haven't seen them since they were little. Their names are Nayel and Sophia. And they've taken an interest in anarchism, so I send them a couple of slingshots and some zines that I got from you. You guys are awesome. Thank you for all that you do. That being said, I need some more zines, dude, to fuel this fire. So I got a list of zines. What I want to do is help my girls to learn about anarchism. So if you want to add some different zines, then please do so. I'm still learning myself. Thanks again for all that you do. And I did. I sent him a bunch of feminist anarchist zines for his daughters, and I'm sure they'll appreciate him. Here's a letter from Patrick Chase, who's stuck at Menard, that hard-ass place in southern Illinois. Greetings. I was just informed of your organization and would first like to thank you for your support and solidarity. Can you send a catalog of what literature you offer, as well as number 425, Anarchist Survival Guide for Understanding Gestapo Swine Interrogations, and 433, Fascist America, Reflections on Orwell. I would give to the cause, but I'm truly indigent. I am truly grateful for you making available literature that does some actual education. Right on, brother. Okay, here's an interesting one. Check this one out. Revolutionary greetings to you all, and I pray that this letter finds you all in good health. I thank you for the work that you do and have done. My name is James Carlos Montoya Santos, a.k.a. Otis Jackson. I am the same Otis Jackson that gave the confession and deposition in the Imam Jamil Abdul El Amin case, the exoneration of H.R.A.P. Brown. Remember how they set up H.R.A.P. Brown? This is the guy that actually shot the cop. And I turned his deposition into a zine titled The Exoneration of H.R.A.P. Brown. Anyway, so he says, I want to help free Imam Jamil El Amin, even if it means death row for me. I ask that you send me a copy of the deposition. I did send him a copy because I no longer have it, and I'm in a right on speaking on the something. Now, my goal is to send this deposition to as many people as I can, and one of those people will help the imam. If you could, would you send me the right on as well? Thank you. And however I can help you, just let me know. I'll be more than happy to help out. Imam Jamil Abdullah El Amin is ill, and it's my goal that he does not die in prison for something that he did not do. I murdered that officer and shot the other one. I hope to hear from you, and I thank you so much for everything that you have done. Also, Jamil's lawyer, Terry Jackson, passed away not long after the deposition, so I can't get it from his office, but I pray that you still have it. Thank you so much. Respectfully, Carlos. See, a lot of these guys are like gang leaders that are now in prison, and they're looking for genuine education from me. Because I tell them the truth, and they come to realize that, many of them. Okay, here's a nice letter from an artist. He sent some really cool artwork with it. Hello, Anthony. I appreciate all the zines. Okay. I've been showing them around. I have two ex-coworkers here that are both Asian. One from Laos named Thong Khao Mi. He asked me to do two-line art pictures out of my head for him. The picture I'm sending is one. The other was a Laotian boy riding across a rice field on a water buffalo with a straw village in the background getting bombed by a B-52 Strato Fortress. I call it the $30 million bomb run. I've yet to show them the Glee Club. I see them in passing now that we don't work together. The Hong Kong Me could have written the movie Gran Torino, except from the Asian gang point of view. In a freer America, he, Laos, wanted a couple of Mexicans coming up to the border with a load of marijuana. I provided the rest. That's an interesting cartoon. I live next to one of those certified ranches owned by the Wiedners, Germans who do not support Hitler but were still racist. Nothing nicer than hearing an 80-year-old grandma using the N-word. I've got more coming. Have a good one, John. Yeah, he's a cool artist buddy of mine. Okay, here's one from...
Anthony.
Yeah.
Anthony, before you go on... Some of our listeners may be new to the show, or at least to you,
mm-hmm.
And I think it would really be good if you could explain a little bit about what you do, about the zines, and how they help people in prison, and
sure.
Also an address where they can get more information.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I run this vast zine, which is short for magazine, these little handmade pamphlets. They're from anywhere from one page to 100 pages, whatever it takes to do that idea. I work in collaboration with prisoner writers and artists mainly, and we create these educational publications that are used by other prisoners to start study groups and learn various things they need to learn about how to survive the legalities of their situation. Their history as a people, the history of a country, politics, analysis, sexuality, health, all kinds of subjects, psychology, things people, I think, really need to know. And apparently they do, because this whole distro is really enthusiastically received by prisoners. They're starting study groups all over. I was just about to read a letter about how the zine sparked a hunger strike in the prison, which they won, amazingly enough. None of them got seriously hurt, and the warden buckled to their demands, which weren't very much. But it shows what the potential is of this type of medium. It's very difficult for prisoners to get information. They don't have any money. They don't have any access to computers or cell phones, mainly. They're not allowed to. They sometimes do. So these pamphlets are about one of the only ways that they can get information. Yes?
Well, very good. Thank you for that.
I'll give you the address, too.
Yes, please do.
Okay, the address is South Chicago, ABC, Zine Distro, P.O. Box 721, Homewood, Illinois, 60430. Also, you could Google DePaul Special Collections Library. My whole collection is also housed at DePaul University here in Chicago. And they also send out tons of zines to prisoners, which is great of them to do. It's a great collaboration I have with them. So, yeah, that's how you do it. Or you could even just Google my name, Anthony Rayson, R-A-Y-S-O-N. I'm sure I got all kinds of things to pop up. So, yeah, there you have it. And once I get a little healthier, I'll be able to plow through these piles full of envelopes. I just got an invitation from Oak Park Library to do a two-hour presentation about my,
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's going to be based. It's going to focus on teenagers. So that ought to be really interesting. Huh. So I'm going to gear it, and I'm going to make a zine about how I've used zines over the years and my activism and, the effectiveness of them, whether it's a prisoner or a bunch of farmers fighting an airport or whatever. These are very handy tools for people to learn information that is important to them. You know, if their farm is going to be taken, they want to know everything they can find out. And I'm there to teach them everything I can find out myself. So, and it's so quick. Yeah. The turnaround, you can make a zine in a couple of days, really. Just put a bunch of, newspaper articles and a couple essays you write, an analysis, a testimony, a letter, whatever, throw it all together with some graphics. You got a zine about, what your community is confronting, And actually, that morphed into a newspaper I was printing for a quarterly newspaper of, information, like 16 pages of every quarter about all the things going on around the airport fight.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, they love that. Those were, and we grew the group from, we took over this group. It was started with 300 people, and we grew up to 2,500 families.
In
about 3 years, yeah.
Wow.
So I attribute a lot of that to our outreach with zines and newsletters and newspapers and, being real proactive and educating them and organizing actions and getting people involved,
Right. Okay, well, thank you. I would love to hear the letter how that hunger strike started.
Okay, let's see here if I can find it. Okay, it's a Brother Anthony. As you read this, I will that your life is peaceful and things are on the up and up. Okay, I've had a fulfilling few months since I last contacted you. Your collection is very powerful. I've been getting some zines from the other addresses, and we've started a study group here at the prison. He's in a prison in Iowa Park, Texas. Okay. Your collection ignited the spark that became a recent hunger strike. The strike was a success. In that none of the comrades were seriously hurt, and the pigs succumbed to our demands and signed a contract, a written agreement. Anyways, Mr. Rayson, I just want to say your services are a jolt of life to those working, walking dead inside these tombs for the living. Thanks. So, wow, you know?
Wow.
I'm not even there and I'm having an effect. You know, that's the power of ideas.
That? Yeah.
Yeah. And I get that all the time. Oh, you know, this has really helped me be able to cope and stand this. I was suicidal and now I'm, you know, I'm recovering. I'm getting it together. I'm going to get out in 2 years. Or, you know, try to help them survive their hellish ordeal, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's really cool because we use the intelligent thinkers to create and the talented artists and writers to create these things. And then, you know, they've been through it all. So who better to teach these other guys that don't know anything yet, you know?
Exactly.
So it's kind of a really interesting synergy to the whole thing. And then to get to Paul and Paul, so all in as they are is really awesome. You don't really expect it.
Yes.
A Catholic university, you know?
I know.
I'm impressed.
And I was lucky enough just about a year ago to see that collection at DePaul, and wow, it was just really impressive. So
yeah. Hey. And they do great work. They really work hard at it. You know, they're really into it.
Yeah.
I respect the hell out of them.
Well, you do great work. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I when I first started this, I had no idea what it would, you know, evolve into, but man, it's really something. And I'm just, you know, trying to keep going. That's all. You know, I'm getting kind of old and beat up and torn apart and cut up, but I'm still got the fire in the belly, you know.
Well, all right. You hang in there.
Oh, I will. I'm
the fire in the belly's okay. The hernia, not so much.
No, that's brutal. Oh, double hernia. Oh, God. I had to do it.
Oh, man.
I had to do it this way because we're getting a new grandson December 15th.
Oh,
and they want to be able to pick him up, you know.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, we have about another, I don't know, 7 or 8 minutes. So you got some more for us?
Yeah, here, I just read you that one from Mansoor, Omali.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And here's, where is it? So many of them are hard to keep straight. All right, here's one. Let's see what we got here. Hello to you at ABC, Zine Distro. I'm writing to you because DePaul University suggested that I also write to you. They send me an assortment of zines from time to time because I request certain zines from the zine listing they sent me months ago. I'm currently putting together and creating a prison zine library in here that I facilitate and run completely by myself. Cool. Because this is fucked up shithole where I'm at will not carry any zines in the actual prison library unless it has that ISBN code number on it. That's stupid. This place is completely unbelievable. So as a result of this and them, I'm the zine library. So they can go to hell. Now what? Anyway, if you can or will, please send me all kinds of zines or whatever, because I need variety of topics and subject matter. Whatever zines you can or will put together and send my way is most greatly appreciated. This is quite a one-man project. Any help and or assistance you can provide will help a lot. Thank you for your time and your kind understanding and my project request. Yeah, I loaded them up.
All right. Yeah. All right. Hey, that's great.
Here's another one. This guy, he's a budding, he thinks, artist. He's got a little logo he put up on the top half of the letter. He goes, "Yo, Ant, shut up. I know I butchered the ABC logo, huh?" You should find at least 5 postage stamps with this, Kate. My contribution to the cause. Sorry it ain't much, but it's what I can provide at the moment. I'm writing to request some good punk anarcho revolutionary literature as well as a catalog if you can send one. I've enjoyed a lot of publications through your distro for 10 years now. Holy shit, I've been in this shithole a long time, man. Yeah. I still got the letters you and I sent discussing prison politics and the way anarchism applies in here. You made a lot of great points, and over the years it has curved my view on the cultural aspect. See, that's why we're trying to influence these guys, you know? I thank you for that. Anyway, take care, comrade. Solid. Bam-dash. Bam-dash, okay? Name is Bam Dash. Okay, let's see here. There's another one. This one. Peace. My name is DeAndre Tate, slave name. My honorable name is Born Ruler. Okay. I'm 26 years of age, and I'm incarcerated in prison. I've been locked down since I was 19 years of age, and have 8 years before I depart from this solitary confinement. Ugh. I'm involved in social political study group with other captives, including my brother, Mansoor G. Owolabi. That was the guy who was talking about the prison strike. He told this other guy to write me, who passed me this address, okay? I'm writing hoping for some type of help on being liberated. Okay, well, I don't know what I can do there, but I can help with your thinking, maybe. I'm in to line with the knowledge of self, but it's still a lot that I lack knowledge of, and because of that, I have a hard time articulating the knowledge to my peers. And because of that, sometimes it makes me seem like I don't know what I'm talking about, when I know the truth. So if possible, can you send me some type of literature so I can help myself? I can save myself, like I said in the beginning of the letter, Monsieur Gio Lobby passed me this address and told me to ask for your catalogs as well as zines and answer to today's Black Entertainment Media by Kevin Rashid Johnson. Okay, now I'll think about this, and you know, some of the zines really do delve pretty deep into the psychology of, you know, getting a grip on yourself and being able to use your brain properly and usefully, and being able to figure things out, and you know, and then also the politics of it, how things happen and why they happen and all that kind of stuff. So I'm going to send him a few choice pieces, the one he requested by Kevin Rashid Johnson, as well as a few of my own, where I go into this, you know, this whole thing of self-respect, and you know, you got to respect yourself before you could expect to do anything for anybody else, really. So, so I'm gonna maybe write him a letter as well, and let him know someone gives a damn about him, you know.
Indeed.
And just keep up with that group out there and help them out.
Anthony, when they write to you, I mean, they must have some kind of postage on their commissary so that they can actually write a letter, or how does that work?
Well, they get like maybe six letters, or maybe a dozen, depends on the prison, that they'll give them, you know, indigent stamp, you know. Some of them buy stamps and have stamps and letters, you know, through the commissary. But the indigent ones maybe can only get like six letters a month. So they're really precious.
Okay.
So a lot of times one guy will write a letter to me, and he'll have like 10 different, you know, 10 different guys on his pod that want zines. So read all their addresses. He wants this. This guy wants this, you know, to save on postage. And that's what I tell him.
Yeah.
It really pisses me off when I get several letters from the same guy wanting, you know, more zines when they should don't waste postage like that, you know. So they got to learn to be frugal with it. But, yeah, sometimes they don't have paper. They write on whatever they can, you know, or they even make the envelope out of, you know, some discarded paper or paper bag or whatever.
Right.
So, and then when they send the artwork, it's usually in an ink or pencil or colored pencil. That's all they can use, really. every now and then they have some
okay.
paint. But...
Well, Anthony, we've used up our time. It's time for the stage break. And
all right. Well, all great right. talking well, great with
talk.
You.
Thanks. Thanks. Talk to you next time.
Okay. Okay. Take care.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist. Featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
She travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions to the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventure Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back, everyone.
I'm here.
Welcome back to the show, to the New American Dream Radio Show. Our next guest is Philip Ferruccio, who joins us from Port Orange, Florida. And we call this part of the show, It's the Empire, Stupid.
It sure is,
Welcome
isn't
to
it?
The show, Phil.
Sure is the Empire, is it, my friend? You know, violence is violence. Yeah. Violence is as violence does, I should say. You know, anyone remember the line from the film Forrest Gump? Stupid is as stupid does. Well, now we have, each and every passing day, the bastard children of our violent empire. Yes, violence has always been with us, this the frailty and flaw of humanity. One would think that as more supposedly evolved a culture becomes, the less inclined it is to choose violence as a meaningful expression or of distaste or disagreement. No siree, Bob. America in this 21st century is more and more violent. Think about this when you hear of the crazed individuals blowing away groups of people or a professional football player losing it and crashing a helmet on the bare head of the opposing quarterback at the end of his team's winning game. Recently, the 15-year-old boy shooter at the California grade school and the man-child football player are but symptoms of just how violent our American empire has become. Most of the apathetic public have never been too concerned for what their government has done and is doing to the people of other nations. Go back to the disgraceful and immoral so-called Vietnam War, whereupon Uncle Sam interceded in what was in essence a civil war between the Vietnamese people. We bombed the shit out of those people with napalm and other incendiary devices that either melted or maimed for life hundreds of thousands of Vietnamese. Let us not forget the 50,000 U.S. servicemen who came home like Vito P. and Tommy L. from my neighborhood
in wooden boxes, and the tens of thousands of their brothers in arms who lost arms, legs, eyes, and in many cases their minds for life. Many great directors like Oliver Stone, Francis Ford Coppola, Michael Cimino, and Stanley Kubrick captured the sad reality of that phony war. Throughout the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and finally right into this new century, this American empire has trampled on the bodies of so many civilians worldwide, all in the name of restoring democracy. Sadly, where is that democracy right here at home? The super rich, whether private or corporate, have the money to place the candidates they purchase on column A or column B of this two-party, one-party scam. The only democracy they allow is to let the voters make the final choice. Sometimes, I say sometimes, because in 2000 and 2004, they wouldn't even allow that to chance. The fix was in both times. This writer recalls how even the deep state stooge, pollster Dick Morris, as political analyst for one of the news networks, summed it up best on election night 2004, when he noticed how the exit polls in Ohio were decidedly for John Kerry. He remarked how they were always right on target. Later in the night, when it became clear that Junior Bush would win Ohio, Morris actually said, in essence, that something smelled. No guns were needed at all to maintain the status quo of continuing to keep our republic hostage and undemocratic. Martin Luther King Jr. said it best, "The greatest purveyor of violence in the world, my own government. I cannot remain silent." Even in the sports world, violence reigns supreme. For over a century, baseball was called America's pastime. Since our intrusion into Vietnam, football became our new American pastime. Think about this. Wars are fought for gaining another's territory by force. Football's game plan is to move into and take over the other team's territory, and finally to land into what they call the end zone. Reminiscent of the anger and rage that permeated in Weimar Germany circa 1930, as the Nazi mindset gained influence among rank-and-file Germans, so one can feel it here and now in America. The deep state's scapegoating of foreign nations parallels a similar attitude by many towards foreigners and or non-white and non-Christian peoples right here at home. For some who think and behave that way, we can dismiss them as just being foolish or stupid. Yet many fine and decent folks in Germany circa 1930 may have said the same thing about those jackasses in brown or black uniforms wearing the swastika. What Forrest Gump should have said is, "Evil is as evil does." Thank you.
Well, that was a depressingly accurate column, Bill.
Yes, it was depressing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I guess it is. So, sometimes you laugh, but you laugh with tears in your eyes,
well,
right?
Exactly.
Oh, man.
You laugh to keep from crying, right?
Yeah, laugh to keep from crying. Sad.
It is sad.
Did you see the debate last night?
I did not.
I did. I taped it. Yeah, I taped it. I watched it in the morning, and it was. Each one they have gets worse and worse. And believe me, I mean the Republicans. the Republicans, when they had their so-called debates in 2016. It was a travesty. I mean, it was really in 2016, the Republican debates were like a comedy routine. I mean, the insulting and the yelling back and forth and Trump acting like an idiot and standing over those two guys, Cruz and Rubio, and looking because they're both very short compared to him. And it was just, it was a comedy. But the one last night, Chuck, it was just terrible. I mean, really, it was absolutely terrible. You got 10 people standing up there, and they all go through the same mantra they give in every debate, the same hook lines and hashtags, whatever you call it. And when it comes to real vibrant issues, and it's funny because the people that were moderating it, as usual. Now it was MSNBC. But the funny thing is, Chuck, is that they could set up a question to already get the result they want. In other words, when they ask the question, you listen to this. When they ask the question about the Medicare for All plan, what the people asking the questions will say, they'll say, well, you know, when about 160 million Americans say they like their insurance plan, how can this thing be work, you know? Now, let me ask you a question, Chuck. Do you think that half of the American public, when asked, are going to say they like having their private insurance?
I seriously doubt it.
Right. So what the question would be, here's what the question would be. What the question would be, do you like the fact of the private insurance that you have now? Do you want the insurance that you have now? Now, when you ask somebody question, they would probably say, yeah, it's better than not having any insurance, right?
Exactly.
It's better than not having any insurance. So that's not the right way to ask somebody. Yeah, I don't think half the public is going to say that they like the insurance they have. You know, so it was a loaded question. And just watching these 10 people answer these questions, it was just a horrible thing. They asked, Mayor Pete, about the military spending. You know, people think that we should cut the military spending. Do you agree? And he puts on that deep voice. You know, so I think at home he probably sounds like this. Yeah, all right, okay. You know, but when he's on the stage in front of people, he says, he has that deep voice, you know. Well, I would say that we just have to, rearrange the military spending, you know. So in other words, you're not saying that we should cut it. No, we should rearrange it in a different manner, you know. And so anyway, it was a farce, and nothing was really accomplished last night. It was just watching the same people give their same, you know, hashtag sound bites. You know what I'm saying? Sound bites.
Yeah.
But the violence continues.
And that's why I haven't watched it.
Yeah, but you know, but here's the thing. See, here's the thing. The reason why I wrote this piece was because when I saw the story about the kid that went to the grade school and killed the other kids in the school, he's a 15-year-old kid, and then when I see the football player take the helmet in anger, you know, he's having an argument and whatever, and he just smashes the other guy on his bare head. The guy didn't have his he took the guy's helmet off, so he was hitting the guy with his own helmet.
Right.
And you know, it's all violence. And what's funny is all these journalists, they're all outraged at the violence. Well, folks, you're outraged at the violence? You know, did you ever look at the scenes in Afghanistan and Iraq of what the U.S. military has done with their carpet bombing? You know, where they melted human beings away with the incendiary devices? And the phosphorus bombs, you know, I mean, isn't that violent?
And what about the, you know, we send drones over and, you know, we try to target somebody supposedly and we end up, you know, blowing away a whole wedding party or something.
Yeah, I mean, and they call that collateral damage.
Oh, yeah, right.
You know what's
collateral damage? That's like the, you know, collateral. You know, that's when you put your house up for a loan. You know, and then you can't pay it, and they take your home. That's collateral damage.
They take your collateral. But here's what's really interesting. You know, we know what Bush. I call that the Bush gang, the Bush Haney gang. We know what they did with regard to Iraq and Afghanistan. That was probably the most horrific event that I can remember in my whole life, seriously. That was even worse than the Vietnam Cold War. But what they did in the Iraq thing, you know, lying like that and, and then carpet bombing and destroying a whole nation's infrastructure and going into the country and just taking it over, all based on lies and innuendo and disinformation. But the interesting thing is when Obama became president and Hillary Clinton orchestrated the NATO attack, okay, on Libya, right? And how all my Democratic friends who I used to stand on the street corner with for years protesting the Iraq so-called war and an occupation, all my Democratic friends, they were all supporting Obama. You know, they supported Obama. And even the people running for office now, I hate to say it, but even Bernie Sanders, he supported the NATO attack on Libya. And so what I asked a lot of my Democratic friends at the time, I said, let me ask you a question. I said, do you have any children? Because most of these people are older. You know, they're my age or even older than the baby boomers. Do you have any children? Yeah. What if you we have a daughter? Yeah. What if your daughter was married to a Libyan engineer, right? And he was working in Libya, so she moved there with her husband, and they had children. And then you have the NATO bombing attack, and you get a phone call, God forbid, that her and her husband and the kids, that they were blown away, you know, by a collateral damage, you know, from a drone. I said, how would you feel then about what we did to Libya? You know, and they can't answer you, Chuck.
Yeah.
You know?
There is no good answer. But,
well, it's because
when
the violence doesn't affect you, you know, a lot of people don't have the empathy. You know, they don't have the sensitivity. It's only when it affects their family or someone they know. You know, so that's what's really sad about what's been going on. And that's why I wrote the piece. It's what's been going on since, well, let's say since Vietnam. It was earlier than Vietnam, it's Korea also. But for our generation, you know, since Vietnam, look what our country has been doing all over the world. You know, with these phony wars and everything, and it's just the use of violence to get what you want. Mm-hmm. You know, I just feel that I hate to say this, but a lot of our fellow Americans, Chuck, people, some of them that we rub elbows with, we shop with them in a store. You know, we see them in a store or passing by, or if I'm at the gym, I'm saying hello to them. A lot of these same people don't give a rat's ass when our country does things like that. They really don't care.
Yeah.
To me, that's really very sad, isn't it?
I agree. Even worse than not caring, they may be proud that our country is doing such and such for them, to protect them, to keep us safe from them.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I drive in the car and you see people with their, you know, license, with their, on the back of their license, proud mother of a Marine or proud grandparent of a soldier. And here's why it bothers me. The reason why it bothers me is, A, we have not been at war since World War II, okay? We have not been at war since World War II. Anything else from then till now is all fake. And yet these people celebrate, okay, the military. I'm not saying that you shouldn't respect. You should respect people in the military. But when you start honoring them, like they would have honored the guys who were in World War II, there's something not right there. I mean, there's a disconnect, you know? And that's propaganda. That's the propaganda that goes through the media, you know, where every sporting event, I can't even, Chuck, I love sports. I don't even, I wait till the game starts because I can't deal with this crap.
Yeah,
this,
me too. I don't want to see the anthem. Thank you.
Not only the anthem, but it's the they bring out the honor guard.
Oh, yeah, I know. Really, it's crazy. You know, It's always some kind of military thing. I mean, sometimes they'll have jets flying by.
They have jets flying by. They have the flag across the whole field, a giant flag, and everybody is solemn, you know, and it's really disgusting. And then they have the soldiers wearing camouflage.
Yeah.
What the hell is a soldier in the United States here wearing camouflage? Camouflage is when you're in a battle zone. And you have to have camouflage on, right? It was really made for when you were doing jungle warfare, you know, not even not fighting in Germany. But the point is, this is what they do. I remember when Obama asked for General McChrystal to meet with him in Denver. Okay, McChrystal came all the way to Denver. They sent to him. He was over in Iraq or Afghanistan. Something happened, and he sent for him. And they show you a picture of McChrystal going on to Air Force One to meet with Obama. Chuck, McChrystal's wearing camouflage. Why is he wearing camouflage?
That's the kind of image they want now. So that's the uniform. Instead of the dress whites and dress blues and all that stuff that they used to have, now it's your dress camouflage.
I mean, World War II, when you had General George Marshall, who was in Washington, right? He was the head guy, head general. He wore the regular army uniform, army dress uniform.
Right.
And
yeah.
all these generals, Eisenhower. You'd see Eisenhower walking around wearing camouflage. Only when you were out in the battle zone did you wear the camouflage. But they have to create the illusion that we're at war. And it's really sad. And then you have a president like this guy, Trump, or like Bush. Well, Bush copped out because, his father got him into the Texas Air National Guard. By the way, in the 1960s, during the Vietnam thing, the last people that would be sent over to Vietnam were the people in the National Guard or the Air National Guard. Those are the last people that would ever be sent. Okay? So so let's get that straight. Trump didn't even serve, and he said he had bone spurs or some baloney, and he was a hawk, as was Cheney.
Right.
But they were hawks during Vietnam. During Vietnam, they were all hawks. They all were.
Really?
Oh yeah, Bolton. How about Bolton? Bolton. He was a hawk. He's about a year or two older than me, and he was a hawk. And they asked him, "How come you never served?" And he said, "Well, I just saw how the war was going; that it wasn't being fought right, and I didn't want to. I had no desire to. That was his excuse why he didn't serve.
I didn't want to risk my ass just somebody else.
No, he didn't say that. He said he just felt that the war was not being operated properly.
That's right. What he said. He just didn't say it in those words.
Right. But what gets me is that the suckers, I mean the voters, they all support these people. I mean it's crazy. It's absolutely insane.
I know.
Trump drops the mother of all bombs. You remember that? It was in August of, what was it?
Yeah,
August
right.
of 17.
Yeah.
He dropped this terrible, terrible thing in Afghanistan. And this idiot who has a show on CNN, Farik Aziz or something, his name is Farad Aziz. Mm-hmm. He has a show. Zakaya Farad. And he has a show. And this moron says on his show, President Trump, he ordered the dropping of the mother of all bombs in Afghanistan, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, now he's presidential. Can you believe that? Can you believe that the man said that? This asshole? And he's looked upon as a respected journalist? You know what I'm saying?
If you think back over the most respected presidents, they were pretty much all war presidents. And we got Washington, Lincoln.
FDR.
I don't know. Who? FDR, yeah.
Right, those are three.
Yeah,
right.
Certainly those are three of the most respected, and they were certainly all war presidents. So, You know, there's, it seems like that's what we worship as a country is wars, conquest.
The kid in the movie,
really
in the movie Full Metal Jacket, when the character Matthew Modine is on the helicopter, he's being taken somewhere with his with the photographer, and the machine gunner on the helicopter. I don't know if you remember the scene, but he's standing there and he's blowing away Vietnamese civilians as he's blowing away, blah 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 blah. There's another Viet Cong, blah 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 blah. And then at the end of all his blah 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 blah, he turns to Modine and he goes, "Ain't war great?" "Ain't war great?"
"Ain't war great?"
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it's a sick society, and I don't think the two party system is going to help change it. That's just my sad note.
Well, yeah, I'd have to say I agree with you on that.
Yeah, it's
well,
sad.
Phil, it's been great having you on the show as always. We are just about at the end. We might have a couple more minutes. But I really do appreciate you, doing this segment with me each week.
Yeah, well, we do the best that we can to try to get people who are listening maybe to wake up a little and to realize that, as my old Sicilian friend once said to me, he said, Filippo, he says, remember, things are never what they seem.
Truer words were never spoken.
Well, thanks
Thank
for having
you,
me.
Thank you, Phil.
Talk to you soon.
And once again, Philip's columns may be seen at itsTheEmpireStupid.com.
Thank you, Chuck.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you, Phil.
Bye-bye.
Okay. All right, coming up in our next segment, we'll have Larry Pinkney, an original Black Panther, and Frank Cordero, who runs the Des Moines Catholic Worker House. So thank all of you listeners for being here with us tonight on the New American Dream Radio Show. And I am Chuck Gregory. We're here on the Revolution Radio Network at freedomslips.com. Since we don't seem to have gone quite into the station break yet, let me mention that my opening song tonight, Camelot, was one of President John F. Kennedy's five favorite songs, at least according to an article that I found on the internet, and you know how reliable the internet is. In any case, that's why I sang it, because tomorrow marks the anniversary of his death. Talk to you on the other side of the station break.
nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship.
You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth.
You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Wexel Politics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Steyer will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
All right. Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the New American Dream Radio Show. And our next guest of the evening will be Larry Pinkney. Larry is an original Black Panther. He joins me each month, and I'm going to be adding him onto the show right about now. So Larry always has some interesting viewpoints to bring us. So it's dialing him right now.
Good evening, Larry Pinkney speaking.
Well, hello, Larry. It's Chuck Gregory, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you are on the air.
Well, it is always great to hear your voice, my brother Chuck, and it's always an honor to be able to speak on the New American Dream radio show. I'm going to be succinct. I shall try to be succinct this evening with what I have to say. I would first of all like to thank the listening audience and hope that they will replay it for all of their associates and friends and family, etc. Now, let's get right down to business. I am, in fact, respectfully urging everyone to read an incredible article by a Ms. Reva Entin, last name spelled E-N-T-E-E-N, Reva, R-I-V-A, Reva Entin. The article was initially published just a few days ago in Black Agenda Report. That's blackagendareport.com. The article's title is McCarthyism Redux. McCarthyism Redux. McCarthyism and the word Redux, R-E-D-U-X. Now, I want to urge, I repeat, everyone to read this.
read the article. This is a person who has absolutely been involved in the struggle, social justice struggle, for all people for many years, many years. But beyond that, she writes an incredible article showing how, quote unquote, progressives have engaged in McCarthyism. And no, I'm not talking about Eugene McCarthy. I'm talking about Joe McCarthy. Okay? Yes. Should anyone be confused? So McCarthyism is something that we, quote unquote, progressives have engaged in and are engaging in. Let me just briefly read, if I may, my own published comment that Black Agenda Report wrote. I wrote it, but they published, so I shouldn't have said wrote.
Okay.
They published what I wrote. I'm going to be very succinct. I wrote, and they published, quote, "This article should serve as a chilling wake-up call to everyone in this nation. The reality of the current self-imposed McCarthyism among so-called progressives is exposed front and center in this article. Read the article." As I said, read the article. All right. I go on to say that I think, well, first of all, after I say read the article, I say ignoring this hideous and dangerous reality will not make it go away. Then I say thanks to Ms. Enting for writing this incredibly thought-provoking and urgent article, and to Black Agenda Report for having the unabashed courage to publish it, end of quote. Now, those were my comments that were published by Black Agenda Report. Those are just my, that was just my comment. But what's far more important, go ahead.
Larry, please. Larry, yes. I found her article, and I don't see your comment.
Oh, well, I'll have to send it to you. Look under comments. Look under comments.
I did.
Okay.
I have to log in order to?
I'm not sure, but hang
all
on.
All I'm getting is please join the conversation on their Facebook page.
No. There were actually.
I don't see.
Let me.
Yeah, it
go.
Looks like the comments are gone.
Well, that's very interesting because
has happened to me before.
Yeah, but there were in fact a number of comments, not just mine.
Yeah.
That are recorded, and I'm looking at it right now. And hold on for one second here. I'm online I'm talking with you. I'm going to go down and I'm going to read to you, or I shouldn't say to you, I should say to the audience, what was actually said by another person.
Okay. So you're still seeing them.
Oh,
maybe
yes.
Maybe it's because you're logged into Black Agenda or something.
It could be. It could be.
Okay.
But Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. It's getting harder and harder to find information or to have information stay available for everyone.
Yes.
With today's internet, there's pretty much an attack on the free distribution of information. You'll see a headline and you want to go read the article, but oh, well, you haven't subscribed to the New York Times, to the Washington Post, to the such and such independent news journal. You can't ever get to read it.
Exactly.
This is one reason. as I share things, more and more I find myself copying the whole article and saying this was originally published on blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
Just because otherwise people won't actually get to read it without paying, and if they're anything like me, they don't like to do that.
Or me. You know, let me mention yet another comment. I won't read the whole comment, but I was not the only one who wrote a comment that was published by Barr, Black Agenda Report. Another person wrote a comment, but her name is Carolina, with a C, Carolina Cositori Citrin. Her middle name is Cositore, last name Citrin. She begins her comment by saying, quote, "Yes, I too recognize this recurrence of McCarthyism among too many self-labeled progressives that one would hope knew better, and it frightens me." And then she goes on, but I won't. Okay. So that was yet another comment, and there were other comments, but I'm pleased to say that, you know, it was, my comments were published just as Carolina's and other comments. But the main thing is, you know, the heck with me, please, I'm urging everyone to read the article. Go to Black Agenda Report. Simply Google McCarthyism Redux, R-E-D-U-X, yep. McCarthyism Redux. Read the article. It speaks for itself. It's very chilling. Mm-hmm. It is a wake-up call, but we need to wake the freak up, with all due respect. We really do. And this is something I'm urging everyone to do for our, not only our own sakes, our personally, but for the future, for the present and the future. And Miss Inting does an incredible job, and she quotes a number of people, but I don't want to spoil the article by telling everybody what it says. I want to urge people to read the article. Go find it. BlackAgendaReport.com. And Black Agenda Report has been around for decades. It's not new.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Right. It didn't just pop up. So
yep.
I urge everyone to check it out for themselves. I tell people, do your own research. And you made a very good point, Chuck. You know, this is what we're watching. What I call the vomit stream, lame stream media. They put up a headline, but then if you can even get to the article, you read the article and you find out that the article has nothing whatsoever to do with the headline. And,
yeah,
you know, this is what we need to wake up to now. All of us wake up to it now.
Yes.
And understand it. So I don't want to belabor this, but I do want to say this. It is always a joy, a pleasure, and an honor speaking with you, Chuck, and being on a part of, in my own little way, a part of the New American Dream Show, because that's what it's about. There's an old jazz song that I love that Nancy Wilson, the singer, I'm talking about the jazz singer, not the rock and roll singer, the jazz singer Nancy Wilson sang with the late, great Cannonball Adderley. And the line goes, if you got to have a dream, because if you don't have a dream, how you going to have a dream come true? So I love that line, and that I want to just finish the New American Dream Radio Show.
Hey, that's a pretty great line, Larry. And, you know, that's been pretty much my problem most of my life. Is I don't really know what to dream, and so how can I have anything come true?
Exactly.
Wow, that's eloquent.
Well, that says it all. And my brother, please take care. My love to everyone that works with you, my love and strength, and to our wonderful audience that I'm sure reads and studies, and they don't go for the ghost, as we used to say back in the day.
Yeah.
In the original, don't go for the ghost. So I'm going to end right now, and thank you so much. Love you, Chuck, and take good care.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being with me. I do look forward to talking to you again next month. and I wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
You too, my brother. You too. All power to the people. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Larry. Bye-bye. Well, our next guest is Frank Cordero, who runs the Des Moines Catholic Worker. And earlier today, I spoke to Frank, and I don't seem. Hang on one second. I'm pulling up the. I'm pulling up the recording right now. One second. I had a little internet problem earlier today, and it kind of interfered with my preparations for this show. So this wasn't quite where I expected it to be, but we're going to be, we're going to have it right here. Sorry about this, folks, but here it goes. All right. Should be able to play it now. Here we go.
Chuck.
Hello, Frank.
Man. I don't care how many times I try to prepare for you, and may even have something to say and ready. As soon as you call me, it's like gone from my mind. I'm looking at it and I say, oh my God, it's Thursday and it's Chuck. No. And today I just put an Oreo cookie in my mouth. So I've been able to digest this thing. Thank you for calling on this Thursday. It's overcast, windy, chilly. Classic fall a day in Iowa. The leaves are all over the damn place. Huh. I've been working on Norman Care, Norman Sierra, the second longest committee member for myself, which, of course, I took 19 years off to become a priest and did that. Sort of thing, but Norman's been around, and Norman's been retired for some time. He writes a monthly in the issue of the Via Pacis. He writes every issue as an article in it, but he's greatly depreciated physically and mentally. And he got a little ornery and wasn't complying with our efforts to try to find out his medical stuff, and bolted on the bus, got lost in Chicago, and they end up calling us from Harvey, Illinois. The social workers there saying they've got Norman. The police picked him up, and he doesn't know where he's at, and having a hard time figuring out what to do. And so he's having some memory issues, and couldn't drive. Couldn't get him on a bus to bring him back. They recommended we pick him up. So we sent folks out there and got him back. And now I'm working through the muddle of trying to, our goal is try to keep Norman as long as we can. Sure. But we need help. So, we're going through all the jumping the hoops. Went to the mental, the psych thing. Now we have to do the neurology thing because of his previous strokes. And now we come to discover he's been getting a check, you know, SSI, for years. But he's putting it in the bank and doesn't spend it. So you got, he said, like $9,000 from an $800 a month check that he's accumulated in the bank that puts him, he can only have $2,000 to qualify for most of these things that help you when you're over 65 and you've got these, you know, handicaps. So now we got this is the issue. How are we going to spend Norman's money so we can get it down below $2,000 and he can start getting the services he needs? I mean, what a crazy country, huh?
It is. I mean, all these... you're penalized for doing better than you might. It's nuts.
Still, it's we've been warning Norman all along. He's an independent guy. He doesn't like anybody to know anything going on. And it's... So, you know, but I'm going like, there's a lot of worse problems I could be dealing with. So we got a social work in on it, and we're going to it's just the thing I want to impress more than anything else is it's now Norman needs more attention and more care. He can't just be an independent soul in our house anymore. I went on and I got on his banking account. We're going to know his medical stuff. We got to start getting people to come in and monitor him. We have to be engaged to do Norman justice. So it's a new dimension, you know, it's elderly care in our community. And that's what we're doing. That's what I'm doing. And that's part of what I'm doing in the community. And the other thing I wanted to talk about, which I was thinking about it, it's Advent. The most secret liturgical season in the whole of the church year. Secret because it's very short, 4 weeks.
Right.
And it is completely overwhelmed by Christmas. And it's not the real Christmas that Advent is supposed to be pointing to.
Yeah.
That's based on the Jesus of biblical times, the Jesus of future times, and the Jesus of our time. No, none of that stuff. It's overwhelmed by the Christmas of U.S. economy and buy. And so in a season where we're supposed to really empty ourselves, devoid of surface stuff and get to the desert places where we're supposed to prepare to receive the birth of Jesus. And in the liturgical world, the birth of Jesus is a three punch thing. I mean, yes, of course we celebrate the birth of the historical Jesus. Yes, of course. We also celebrate the birth of the Jesus yet to come. That's a whole different Christ.
Yeah.
And then we also celebrate the Jesus with us today, which is the works of mercy and those among us who are the least. And that's the people we go. Those are the three levels of Christmas that we need to be preparing ourselves to embrace. So Advent's completely obliterated and Christmas is bought out. So it's a very, very difficult time to get to the heart of things. But my time with Norman is reminding me yet again that quality, godly, humane time is a labor-intense person-to-person stuff you got to do and be accountable to the people you're living with. And Norman is pushing us to be accountable to do him right because he deserves right. He's been with us for years. Wonderful man. And we need to be able to pay attention. So that's what I've been doing. No word on Jess and Ruby. It's just kind of like, I don't know. I can't say anything. All I can do is pray and hope that whatever they decide to do, we can be of some help and service. So that's where I'm at. Yeah. God bless.
Well, Frank, thank you.
All right. I just gab. Thank you for letting me do that.
It was good. I liked it. And, very, very good thoughts on Advent and Christmas.
Yeah. No one's going to notice. I don't know why we bother. Okay. All right.
If you keep doing it, then there's no chance they'll notice. This way, at least.
You're right. If you don't tell the story, there's no chance it can even come true.
All right.
Amen. All right, friend. God bless. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. And so here we are telling the story. I'm going to close this segment by remembering again a little bit about John F. Kennedy. If he was actually starting to make some inroads on intelligence community, the what we might now today call the deep state. Term hadn't been invented yet back then. And if he hadn't gotten knocked off, well, our country might look totally different than it does today. So, based on that same article I mentioned earlier with Kennedy's favorite songs. Here's another one. When I was a young man courting the girls, I played me a waiting game. If a maid refused me with tossing curls, I let the old earth take a couple of whirls while I played her with tears in lieu of pearls. And as time came around, she came my way. As time came around, she came. But it's a long, long while from May to December, and the days grow short when you reach September, when the autumn weather turns the leaves to flame. One hasn't got time for the waiting game. Oh, the days dwindle down to a precious few. September, November, and these few precious days I'll spend with you. These precious days I'll spend with you. And the wine dwindles down to a precious brew. Talk to you on the other side of the station break, everyone.
Comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Alert, listen up now.
Tune into Crypto Corner with Retro 0xE
05173.
We talk about decentralization and bank annihilation.
Bitcoin, Litecoin, MyCoin, YourCoin, Blockchain, baby.
Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern, Studio A.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back, everyone. Here we are heading into the home stretch, the final segment of the New American Dream Radio Show. And our next guest of the evening is M.K. Davis. M.K. is a Bigfoot researcher, and among other things, but he always has some very interesting things to share with us, and I'm going to bring him on to the show right about now. M.K. joins us in the third week each month. We're very lucky to have him. His phone should be ringing right about now. So,
hello.
Well, hello, MK. It's Chuck Gregory, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
All righty, Chuck. I'm going to talk a little bit about a cryptid from down under. When I say cryptid, I mean they used to exist. Their existence has never been in doubt, but they've been declared extinct, I believe, since the 1980s. They met the criteria for being extinct. And it's an animal that lived in Tasmania, and it looked a lot like a dog, and people tend to give it canine characteristics. But in actuality, is no kin to a canine at all. And they were from the late 1800s on into the early 1900s. They were part of a government bounty. They paid money for you to kill one. And they eventually killed them all. They were, it's called a thylacine. It looks dog-like, but it's actually a marsupial, and it has tiger stripes or zebra stripes. They call it a Tasmanian tiger. That's one of the nicknames for it. From the rump on up, kind of midway of the back, and then it's tan everywhere else. Got some white on the ears. It's got an odd-looking foot. The feet are plantigrade. In other words, it can stand on its hind legs like a bear. So, yeah, it's as much as it looks like a canine or a dog, it's no kin to the dogs. And like it carries its young in a pouch, and it's more kin to a kangaroo. But they were predators, and they were blamed for a lot of killing a lot of sheep. And so the government began a program of eradication. And the last one known to exist, provably, existed in a zoo in Tasmania, in Hobart, little town called Hobart. And somebody went there and famously filmed them with some decent quality equipment. And it's known as the Hobart footage, thylacine footage. And what I've been doing is working with that footage, trying to upgrade it through processing. And I've had some pretty good success with it. It's shot at about 9 frames per second. It was kind of herky-jerky. And I was able to fill those frames, fill that space between using the film itself, and this processing method smoothed it out tremendously. You can find that on the davisreport.wordpress.com as some of the later postings on there. Two or three different small clips that I did. When you're talking about, you know, this processing, you're dealing with 2 frames from that film, and then it becomes 12 frames. So you fill all in those pieces where the, you know, the eye, if you go below a certain threshold in frame rate, you begin to see flickering. You begin to see the individual frames. So I've boosted it back out of that threshold, above that threshold, where you see the thing as smooth cinema. And it makes a lot of difference in what you see on the animal and what you see of the animal. So I was real pleased at the result, and I was real pleased that I was able to get that footage and boost it like that, because to me it's real important that this is the last documentation of the animal. And there's not a lot of photos. There's, you know, here and there's some photos taken a long time ago. But after 1936, everything is kind of up in the air about whether it's actually a thylacine or not. People claim to see them on the mainland. In recent years, there's actually some groups. One of them is called the Thylacine Awareness Group. And they are searching for them on the mainland, more so than Tasmania. They used to exist on the mainland, and they find their drawings on cave walls done by the Aborigines. But they're thousands of years old. And when the Aborigines that came across into Australia, they brought these dogs with them called dingoes. And a dingo, I don't know if you're familiar with a dingo, but a dingo is even though it's a dog, it's got some features about it that it's like a souped-up dog. It's got a tremendous heart. It can run tirelessly for long periods of time. It's got this big the head shape, and the positioning of the eyes are different than a normal canine. And so they're what they call, they're super predators when they kill in packs. And the dingoes kill the thylacines out of the mainland. So they've been gone from the mainland, according to tradition, for a couple of thousand years. So, but people are claiming to see them in some of these remote areas, the rainforest areas, mountainous rainforest areas. But there was also a program in Tasmania in the late 1800s on into the early 1900s where people were clandestinely trapping thylacines and releasing them. They would put them aboard a boat in a crate, and they would pay the captain to put them off anywhere that they went, no matter where it was. So they only in recent years found out about this program, and they have a book where they kept a log of the different animals that they had sent out of Tasmania. So when you have these animals that are out of place, they're not in their natural environment. They may be in the southern part of the United States or Puerto Rico or wherever the ships went. And the captain had a convenient place that he could just let them out, open the door of the crate and just let them run. And, So whenever people say, I saw a chupacabra, I can't help but think of that a thylacine can stand on its hind legs. And they're notorious goat livestock killers. That's why they put the bounty on them in the first place, chickens. And Puerto Rico was the first place to say, you know, that we've seen this strange animal, and they call it a goat sucker. And I thought to myself, well, you know, this could be the explanation for that. If you look at the thylacine on my blog site, you can see it on its hind legs. You can see that flat foot, that plantigrade foot, where it can, and it's real heavy, thick tail like a kangaroo. And so it can actually get up on its hind legs, and that's the way they described the chupacabra. They said it did a funny little hop, and it was killing chickens. Thylacine won't stop. They'll kill all the chickens. You know, they were just notorious for that. And as a matter of fact, the person who filmed them in the Hobart Zoo was bitten by one of the thylacine.
Wow.
Right. Which they call them a Tassie or a Tasmanian tiger or a marsupial wolf. Uh-huh. They've borne a lot of names. If you look at the Hobart Zoo, which I was able to improve that film, you can tell that most of the mounts, the stripes are very faded, but on the live animals, it was white, black, real high contrast.
Really?
Yeah. It was like a zebra. It was about from the midway of the back. And also that about where the stripes start on the back, there is the back begins kind of a swell or a hump. And when they get down low, you can see it. So there's some part of the anatomy. And I try to pay attention because if you were to – I get sent a lot of pictures from down under, people taking distant photos that they think could be a thylacine. If you have a side profile, the thylacine will have a rump extension, a big muscle on the rear end that controls that heavy tail. And it shows very, very well in a side profile. And a dog does not have that, or a fox doesn't have that, you know. So that kind of helps in getting a good ID if you have a side profile. Because, you know, there's a lot of pictures out there, and people turn them into the thylacine awareness group, and sometimes they forward them to me, and I look at them, and, you know, you can't really tell a lot because they're pixelized, they're distant, but if you can see that little rump extension, on that's on the tail end of it, on the rear end of it, that's a good indicator that it was a thylacine. So it's like the ivory bill. You know, nobody wants to really say they're gone. Ivory bill's been declared extinct 3 times. Right now it's extinct. The thylacine, you know, it's been declared extinct several times since 1936. And right now it's extinct as of the 80s. No one has documented or given any reasonable, you know, idea that there could be one since the 1980s. And there's eyewitness accounts, but that nobody believes that because it's so easy to mistake a fox or a dog, you know. But they have a very distinctive type of paw print too. It's kind of like. It's kind of like a kangaroo in a way, you know. You could say, well, it looks kind of like a dog, but they're longer, thinner toes. The pad is thicker, more round, you know, rather than your little, the dog shape pad, you know, where you got a little triangle there. This is less of a triangle and more round type, and it's got the, you know, creases and stuff in it. It's not a thick, hard pad like on a dog. So, you know, I would love to think that they're still there. And that's one reason I did the work on the film, is because I want to give people a real good idea of what they're looking for. You know, the best possible, the very best possible images and moving images, so that you can see, you know, its characteristics. It has a distinctive lope when it runs, you know, with the tail used as a balancing, you know, kind of like a little bit like a kangaroo in a way. Really a dangerous animal. And a lot of people that they'll bite you and put a hurting on you. Why they caution people that if you do see one, you know, don't approach it. Because, you know, it may rip you. Well, of course, a dingo could do the same thing too.
Right, you know? Right.
So, Tasmania.
MK, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about how you fix up these films. You went into it a little bit, and I think that could be a very interesting topic for our listeners.
Well, yeah, it's you know, if you got a frame one and then you have frame two, and it's taken at a real slow frame rate, there's part of the action is missing. So when you jump from frame one to frame two, you see a big jump in the action because of the missing parts there. So what I do is I'll take one frame one, and I'll load it into an animator, and then I'll take frame one and overlay frame two with it. With about 10% transparency. And then I'll put that in the animator, and then I'll go back and boost the transparency to 20%, and then load that in the animator, and then till I reach all the way up to 100% transparency, and then you have the frame two essentially by itself. So instead of a jump from frame one to frame two, it's a gradual move. I call it a transition. So it becomes very slow, took like 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100. You see, and that what that does is take that big leap in the action out and produce something that's smooth. It becomes cinema, cinematic effect.
But it's still jumping. You haven't.
What you've done is you haven't added to or taken away anything. But what I was getting at. You've changed the way the mind processes it. You know, that's what you've done. The mind is now seeing it as a smooth cinema, as live action, rather than a jump. The jump takes away a lot because it flickers. Go ahead.
The reason I'm asking, someone who wanted to be critical, of a, I don't know, a reconstructed video or whatever you call it, might think that you were actually inserting things, or, you know, maybe taking the thing and then kind of shifting its position so it's partway across between one frame and the next, and actually inserting frames and creating the action that way. And what you're actually doing is getting the mind to do that rather than making a change in the film.
Right. No, there's nothing. You're still working with frame one and frame two. You know, nothing's been added to. But what you're doing is making that handoff between the one and two to be more protracted and smooth. By using the film itself, not adding to or taking away. And of course, nowadays they have what they call predictive software that can produce 60 frames a second, but it actually creates the frames, and that's not scientific.
Right.
You can't use that on any kind of analysis because it's essentially a cartoon.
Right. But now you've done film processing on the Kennedy assassination as well, I think.
Right. You're able to slow the film way down and still keep a smooth, flickerless run of it, and so that you're able to see more going on because it's not jumping or leaping from between frames. So it's a big boost in any sense of the word for analyzing, you know.
Right.
And if you look at the thylacine footage that I've done on my blog site, thedavisreport.wordpress.com, I've got a little Patterson stuff there, but if you go below that, you'll see those thylacine clips. It's a huge improvement. So, you know, you can see the skin shake and the muscles moving and stuff. It's there anyway, but it's a lot easier to see when you slowed it down and you've created this smooth transition where you can see the rippling of the muscles and stuff. It just gives the person the opportunity to understand what they're looking at, a good view of it. Mm-hmm. And so if you go out into the bush and you're in Tasmania, you're looking for it, you kind of know a little bit about it. You know about that rumpus.
Right.
You know about the stripes are going to be high contrast. You know, you know, they're going to show up like a zebra. So if you don't see that white stripes, you know, you're probably not looking at a thylacine. So, you know, that's kind of the way it goes. You gotta kind of understand what you're looking for. And then once you do, you know, the chances go up, you know, that somebody will get a good ID on it.
Right.
So, you know, it's not just the fact that it has stripes. People look at these stuffed ones and the stripes are all faded. And I've seen drawings, you know, artist conceptions and stuff. They all have that faded stripe. They just used the stuffed animal to make their drawing with. You look at the Hobart footage and you see that their stripes are very high contrast. Not much doubt about that. So you should see it. You should see that. And if you don't see it, you don't see the rump extension, then you know, you're probably looking at a fox or something like that, you know.
Well, I wonder what sort of, you know, I don't know, evolutionary advantage or whatever those bright white and black stripes gave this thing.
You know, that's a good curious question. Very good question. Tasmania, you might find the answer, you know, in the bush, you know, if there's something that's growing out there that makes it blend better with those stripes. But the stripes are don't cover the whole animal. They just go, they start about halfway down the back and just go over the rump and maybe a ring or two, you know, there on the tail. But they're not all encompassing at all. So it looks, it's one of those weird things like the platypus, you know, it just looks like God was having a great time, you know, just mixing and matching.
Yeah, we'll take a little of this and we'll take a little of that.
It does. That's what makes Australia and Tasmania and New Zealand such a wonderful place. because they have their wildlife is so different down there.
Have you been down there?
No, I'd sure like to go one day. I'd like to give it a go and see if I could locate a thylacine. I think it would be one of the major discoveries or rediscoveries this world has ever seen, at least in my modern world. It makes me feel kind of good that something held out, you know, against beat the odds, you know.
Yeah. I mean, every so often we do, you know, see something that, oh, hey, we thought this was extinct, but we just found a whole family.
Yeah, well, it happens. Yeah. You know, they found a whole bunch more of the mountain gorillas. You know, they thought, well, we're only down to just a few hundred. But then somebody found another mountain where there were thousands of them. So, you know, they're not in the kind of danger that we thought that they were. But, you know, it's you know, we have to take care of the sensitive animals. You know, we can't just let them die.
Yes.
And the government, you know, it's not, you know, it's regrettably the government that's there now tries to do right. You know, nobody wants to see them go extinct. But back in the day, I think they went extinct before they realized it. Yeah. The ones in the Hobart Zoo were trapped by a trapper, and they had pups, and they had if you want to call them that, pups or whatever you call a marsupial, and the Hobart Zoo's got little, you know, films of them from the Hobart Zoo, 1936. But they all died. They didn't do well in captivity. Yeah. Disease or whatever got them. And they just died. They died right there. So they haven't been able to trap any more since.
All right. Well, this has been a fascinating segment, MK, and I really appreciate having you join me each month. I wish you a happy Thanksgiving next week.
The same to you.
And I look forward to talking to you in December.
Fantastic.
All right. Thanks.
Take care.
Thanks so much. Okay. Bye-bye. And listeners, that's about it. This is the New American Dream Radio Show. I am Chuck Gregory. We're streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomflix.com. Thank you for joining us.
We'll be back next week and every week.